This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today on Keeping the Faith about nonviolent communication, and we're talking by phone with two guests from Sydney, Australia, Maria and Richard McGuire. Can you folks hear me all right?
Yes, we can.
Ah, excellent. I don't know whether the telephone lines go via satellites or whatever, but we're delighted that you're able to be on the program and things are working.
Yeah,
thanks,
that's wonderful.
To the great technology.
Amazing.
So, nonviolent communication. How did you get interested in this topic?
Well, we both of us have been quite concerned about communication. When I was a student at the University of Illinois, I became aware of how much communication is an issue between in families and in our society. That was the time when we had civil rights coming up, many struggles in my own community in Chicago, and began to look into what helps people understand one another and be able to say how they feel and keep in connection with each other and learn from one another.
Now, Maria, you were educated first in Germany and then also later in the United States. How did you and Richard discover this together, this interest?
Yes, I mean, communication is pretty basic to our whole life and family struggles. Both of our parent families had struggles with each other, and often we found ourselves trying to negotiate or building bridges so that some understanding of the other side was possible, and also in our communities. Like, I worked in Berlin, and we worked later at the Wall, trying to always find, is there a way of seeing enemies as people and finding what's going on for them and what are their needs and so on. And so our life basically has been about trying to grow communication in our personal settings, in our work life, and in our communities. And this discovering the nonviolent communication was in some way very natural, because it added to our skills and our understanding of what is so basic in a human life, and how the challenges of our time can be helped if we get to the level of what makes us tick as human beings. And that has something to do with that we always see things as they are. Like, they talk about four steps in particular. We see things as they are, but we see them with our own eyes. So it's very important that we mention what we are actually seeing, what are we observing, and keep that free from our judgments. And then the second step is that we actually always have feelings in what we are seeing and experiencing. We can't get away from it. It's not just our head that is in action. It's also the feelings of the whole system as it operates. And that we express those feelings, and that we don't assume we know what another person is feeling when we are observing certain things, because they might be feeling something else than what we think their gesture means or their expression or their words mean. And then the third level is that we look at what are the needs underneath those feelings. And those are needs that connect us with humanness. They are not their needs, I need a car, or I need better shoes, or I need this or that external thing. But they have to do, I need comfort, I need understanding, I need security, I need belonging, all that. And then the fourth level is that we express what we really want without making a demand, but making it as a request. And the difference between a request and a demand is that it is said in such a way that the other person does not feel obliged to say yes to it, but that they make a free choice. So those four levels are very, very basic for the whole approach of nonviolent communication.
Now, who did you learn these from? Someone else? Have these been developed over time but from many people? Did you invent some of these yourself? Where do they come from?
Well, the one major figure in developing this, the particular form that we're talking about now, is Marshall Rosenberg, who grew up in Detroit. And he was early in the 40s, had experience of the conflicts in communities, and set about learning ways to have people come to understanding with each other. And he was he went into psychology, and he was not happy with the kind of psychology that would analyze people and tell them what was wrong with them or what where their problems all came from, but how important it is for people to be able to express their feelings and to find and to recognize that the needs they have are also the needs other people have. We first heard about him and his work directly through an interview that we heard on our radio here that was done in the United States through New Dimensions Radio, where he talked with Marshall Rosenberg. And we were very impressed that Rosenberg was not only concerned with interpersonal communication, but also people who have learned his approach and use it have worked in, and he himself worked in Bosnia, Rwanda, many places of conflict in the United States, to have people to just go in with the goal of having understanding the people there themselves, and also to bring about the possibility of them understanding one another. And when we heard him talking about his approach that Maria just outlined on the radio, we realized how useful that could be. And actually, we started trying it out with each other and found that it improved our communication a lot. We're very pleased with that.
So it's not just a matter of conflict between nations and tribes of people, but it can also be helpful interpersonally.
Oh, very much so. It's whenever we've it's something that you learn, but then of course in particular situations you might forget, and then things aren't going so well. And there's moments of moments of grace where I remember, well, how is that other person feeling, or I notice how I'm feeling. Either way, to express how I'm feeling or to give some attempt to express that the other person is excited or angry or unhappy or whatever, either side. Having some recognition of the feelings of one of the people involved usually opens up the communication in a way that's hard to match with any other approach.
Let's look at these principles one by one, if we might. Let's go back to the very first. Maybe it's even a preamble to the first, but seeing one's opponent or enemy or the person one's in conflict with as a person. That seems such a difficult hurdle to get over, since we're all so good at stereotyping and seeing people as less than human if they're fundamentally opposed to who we are and what we're for. How does one do that? What kind of imagination does it take to get over that barrier?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of preparation before the act itself. When you are in the struggle itself, it's often easy to get into a reactive pose, which is, of course, influenced by your experiences and also your anxieties and all that stuff. So in preparation, just to ask yourself, what makes that person maybe act that way? What is behind it? What are their experiences and what are their feelings in terms of how did they get that way? And what are they after? What are they longing for? What do they want to see happening? Marshall himself mentions a very explicit experiences of really being threatened in several situations, such as when he was in Palestine, and some of the people that he met were, of course, very hot against anything American, and they noticed his accent right away, and then were blaming him right away as an assassin and sort of murderer and a protagonist of the other side. Because they were saying, you deliver all these weapons here, et cetera, et cetera. And to get behind that, he just said, tried to get to the feeling and said, you sense that we are really missing out on what's going on here, and you are angry because my government is doing all this, and you feel the resources could be used in a much more productive way to serve the people. And just by stating that maybe that person identified him as an American as being an enemy, and accepting that and giving it back and saying almost yes to that, this is how you might be feeling or thinking, he opened the door to more, and it wasn't finished then. So that first statement that he made as a reaching out a hand or so didn't change the situation. There was a lot more that he had to acknowledge, the rage that was going on, and discover the experiences that individual had of what they felt the oppression was that was going on in their own country and in their own locality, as well as maybe stuff that related to worldwide conflicts and so on. So you start with the concrete situation and you acknowledge where the other person is coming from. That's one of the steps.
That sort of reflective listening, being a
yes.
mirror to bounce back to the other what they've just said, and putting it in your own words, that kind of Rogerian
yes.
psychological method. It can sort of just be a technique, and the hearer can still not really understand the other person. Does Rosenberg, or have you discovered in your work ways to help people get through that?
A couple of things on that. One is that you go beyond the words. It's to identify what the feeling is that the other person is expressing behind the words, and to capture that. But also, a very important part of it is to say your own feeling. So you're not simply a mirror or bouncing things back, but you are acknowledging your own feeling of being anxious or happy or unsure, and that really builds a great bridge. One thing that keeps people apart is not realizing that the other person is actually feeling or thinking something, or what the needs are that are behind the feeling. And the need is not something like, I need something from you. You know, I need you to do what I want you to do, or I need something from you. But it's a need more like, I need acceptance. I need a sense of security. It's things that everybody, you can recognize that. And if you hear that from another person, or if you acknowledge it within yourself, that builds a bridge. It's very difficult to fake that kind of thing. You can't act like you're interested when you aren't. It shows up very quickly, in the sense.
So if there's a real communication of those, an understanding of those basic needs on mm-hmm. each side,
yes.
How does that then lead to the next step, the step four, saying what you really want, not as a demand, but as a request?
Yeah, that takes training how to express it so it comes across well. And just by the response that you get, you notice if it came across in a free way or in a still pushy way or demanding way. That depends on the particular language that you are using. And the internal preparation is that the person that's learning how to say it allows themselves that they are not dependent on a yes to the request. That is, the request is only one way of getting your needs met. Often when we are stuck on our own needs or what we want or whatever, we think, I need to get this from the other person or from the situation or from an understanding about something. That is one particular thing, but the request is always just one way of getting your needs met. And so there is the lightness in it. And then there is it's almost like a question, would it be okay with you if we considered this? Or would it be okay if we go with such and such a suggestion? But it's only a suggestion. It's not a have to. Because if you make it as a have to or as a should or as an ought or as a must or whatever, there is an attachment to it that makes the other person just a respondent to the demand, and therefore, I think this is very true to life, therefore, you put the other person in a dependent situation, and they want to get out of it, and they will ask for some payback. Sort of, they want you the next time to respond or get back at you as being the one who received this and therefore needs to give now the next time. You know what I mean?
We're about 15 minutes into our hour discussion on nonviolence communication today on Keeping the Faith here on WILL AM 580, a radio service of the College of Communications of the University of Illinois. Our guests by phone from Sydney, Australia, today are Maria and Richard McGuire. Richard is a graduate of the University of Illinois back in 1964 and went on from here to seminary in California and then pastorates in this country, in Nebraska, and then also in Europe. He and Maria married in 68, where they met while in seminary. She had come from Germany to San Francisco, and they have worked with the Institute of Cultural Affairs in Europe, Berlin and elsewhere in Germany, Brussels. Went to Australia in 84 to work with the Institute of Cultural Affairs there, and now are continuing with their own organization, Unfolding Futures, which listeners can learn more about online, Unfolding Futures. And if you'd like more information on the Center for Nonviolent Communication, do go online to cnvc.org, where there's a lot more materials and information about nonviolent communication. If listeners would like to ask a question or make a comment about our discussion today, this is a live program every week here on WILL. Do call us anywhere the program is heard, including on the Internet. You may punch in 1-800-222-9455. That's anywhere in the continental U.S., 1-800-222-WILL. In Champaign-Urbana, local listeners may punch in 333-9455 for several local lines. So in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL, elsewhere 1-800-222-9455. Well, I'm very happy that our communication is working well via satellite or however it's getting from Sydney to Champaign. Richard, let me ask you a little bit. In your work as a pastor, I know conflict in congregations is, inevitable because people are there and there are different opinions and different feelings and often misunderstandings, different agendas. How have you found this technique to work in this country and Europe in the congregations where you've served as pastor?
Yes, well, I only learned about this particular Marshall Rosenberg's approach in the last couple of years, nonviolent communication. But the basic principles are ones which underlie a lot of the best work that's done in working with communities. It's very parallel to the work we did use in congregations quite a bit, which we learned from the Institute of Cultural Affairs, where the conversation is a very similar kind of approach to look at what's actually going on, what's happening, what is it that people are happy about, and getting at what is it they're excited about, what they're inspired about, what they're unhappy and angry about, and having that all come out and be accepted. I was very inspired by Carl Rogers, who you mentioned in the beginning, about this whole approach that accepting the other person's feelings and your own as well, and their sense of the situation was really key to having communication without having to agree with whatever someone was saying, not have to agree in the intellectual plane, but just simply acknowledge that that was the way that person saw things. I found that very useful in the congregation to use the approach that brought out the observations of the situation that people had. Our congregation in Omaha was very small and in a community that was experiencing a pretty good degree of conflict in various issues. It was a racially mixed community, not just black and white, but also many Native Americans lived in the community. And we found it was possible to have community meetings where people would bring out all their hopes for the community and the issues they found and actually deal with them in a way that was by putting them up, writing them down, and looking for how they related to one another rather than argue with each other about which one was more important, that they actually got to more depth. And that also worked in the congregation, that people came to more depth about what they were facing and what was keeping that going, and could be much more honest with each other and themselves and realized that that in some way all of us were had some contribution to the problem, and we were also a major contributor to the solution. And that was that gave the worked with that way in churches in the church in Germany as well. And that's what we teach as part of our work, first with the ICA and now in our work, is how people, by listening carefully and asking questions, that people can actually express what they're experiencing and how they're feeling and what those things mean to them, which is really important, to say what it means to me to experience these things and have that accepted by others makes such a difference in the communication that happens.
Since this is a program that deals with religious issues, spiritual issues, as well as ethical and communication issues, how does all this relate to your faith? The kind of focus on nonviolent communication, does that fit with the Christian faith as a Protestant pastor yourself?
Yeah, but. Both of us are very concerned about how to make faith real in all of our life, not just in personal matters or so, or family situations, but really in all that we are doing. And we're very attentive to the big picture as well as the small picture. So in some way, we feel that really this is about loving your neighbor as yourself. And it doesn't mean that you stand away from what you believe in and find really important for nurturing life, but it is opening yourself up to what is emerging with the other person. How is humanness expressed, and how our commonness as human beings is always stronger than what divides us, and that we can come back to that rather than getting stuck on being right or righteous. And finding forgiveness, the reality of forgiveness and compassion and understanding is so essential for us in terms of the Christian faith, and that in some way we are overcoming any image of enemy. We all have it in some way. We sort of grow up with all these ways of seeing other people and finding enemies, but as soon as you really start looking at an enemy as a human being, the divisions can actually be less important than what connects us as human being. If we find a heart connection, and it seems like particularly Sermon on the Mount and so on from Jesus' words, speaking in that direction so strongly. And then also about the nurturing life in terms of receiving and giving, that giving is receiving, and letting go is actually enriching you. That if you can let go of your desire to control or to have power or to be greedy, or if you can admit it, that comes in, sort of like admitting the bulk in your own eye rather than looking for the splinter in the other person's being. And admitting it and accepting it, and then letting it go and accept the forgiveness that is always there, and it's coming from God, but it's also there in a situation. It's not just in your own personal corner, but it is life itself has, if you see it from a point of creation, creativity is in every situation. Lilies on the field and so on, and the sparrows are cared for, and so also the other person is cared for. And then all this stuff about being a servant rather than a leader in terms of a producer or a maker or an achiever, that the leader is a servant, and that we are here to, in some way, not to be the first, but to be the last. And that grace is accessible. I mean, there's so many things that we feel have something to do with making faith real if you live nonviolent communication and have respect for whatever is happening.
We have a caller waiting on line number one of our local lines. Let's go to that caller. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guests, the McGuires. Go right ahead.
Yeah, are you familiar in terms of interpersonal communications, Dr. Gottman?
Oh, yes.
Okay, and it was the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse? But what I remember you know, it's, in other words, a progression toward all of a sudden the point that the other individual shuts down. But I just remember, you know, listening to your conversation about the third one, which was defensive. You put the other person on the defensive, and what it's so destructive, you know. That,
yes.
You know.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. We appreciated Dr. Gottman very much. He also added to our our harmony with one another, and that's what one thing we appreciated about learning from Marshall. The one way to get out of that defensiveness is to ask myself, well, what am I actually feeling? Without even being, you know, necessarily aware of the other person's feeling, to just express that I'm feeling anxious, rather than talking about you, so and so, or I didn't do it, or all those kind of things that avoid what your inner relationship is, break the communication.
Yeah, the other thing I think sometimes happens is the one that puts the other person on defensive,
yes,
is actually protecting her or himself.
Yes, very much so. Yes, and in a way, unnecessarily. It's amazing how we found it well with one another, and also in our work when we're working with consulting or leading a program, to allow my own feeling to come out really helps build the bridge. Whereas if I try to put pressure on the other person to come around or show how they're wrong, that just leads to more and more conflict, to me, and in some way, that's comes back to this sense of what the faith is. That somehow, God is somehow there to give care, and I open myself to that care by allowing myself to say how to be open to my inner world and also to the world of the other.
Mm-hmm. Also, being vulnerable,
Yes.
Interesting discussion. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. We're about halfway through our program today on Keeping the Faith with our guests Maria and Richard McGuire, talking with us from Sydney, Australia via telephone. We'll be getting back to them in just a moment. Let me take a few minutes just to mention who else is coming up on this program in the weeks ahead. Next week, we'll be talking with Carol Ammons about criminal injustice in the United States, particularly in Illinois and Champaign County even. On October 22nd, we'll be talking with Professor Matt Bolton from Andover-Newton Theological Seminary about American traditional music in worship. On the 29th of October, Sandra Otten will be our guest, talking about books for prisoners. Pastor Julie Ryan will be talking about Bread and Roses, Justice, Compassion, and Beauty, and on November 5th. She's the interim pastor at St. Andrew's Lutheran Church here on the University of Illinois campus. And then we have an Israeli guest I will be speaking with on November 12th, about the secular religious divide in Israel. Her name is Gail Harevin. That's on November 12th here on Keeping the Faith. Coming up later tonight, in fact, at the University Y, where I'm the executive director, Muslims will be breaking their fast for today as part of Ramadan at 6:15, and are welcoming other students, who, particularly university students, high school students, who might be interested in learning more about Islam. Come to the University Y at 6:15 for a free dinner provided by some of the members of the Intercultural Freedom Friendship Foundation, a Muslim group largely made up of graduate students from Turkey. That's at the University Y tonight. That's 1001 South Wright. The dinner will start about 6:15. There'll be an opportunity to learn more about Islam and ask questions. And then also the same group, the Intercultural Friendship Foundation, made up of local Muslims here in Champaign-Urbana, on October 16, are inviting religious leaders in this area to come to the Illini Union for another dinner celebrating the end of of the fasting for Ramadan on that day. That's on Monday, October 16. Come to a dinner at the Illini Union. I'm a bit embarrassed to admit, but they are giving me an award that night because of this radio program, which they believe has contributed to increasing interfaith understanding by letting people of many different religious traditions have a voice on this public radio station. So if you'd be interested in that, you do need to make let them know you're coming to the October 16 dinner on the Monday night at the Illini Union. And the way to do that is just to give me a call at the University YMCA, 337-1500. So if you're interested in the dinner October 16, do make a reservation with me. My name is Steve Shoemaker at the University Y, 337-1500 and area code 217. Okay, this program is supported in part by the University Y. The Y is the oldest continuous student organization at the University of Illinois, established in 1873. Since that time, has been providing opportunities for students to be involved in important social action activities and community service. Coming up at the Y this week, a lecture on Tuesday at noon on development work in the Ivory Coast. A U of I graduate student spent the summer there and has come back to report on that. That's a free lecture this Tuesday noon, October 10, at the University Y. If you'd like a lunch, we have a wonderful Thai restaurant, Thai food there. Do call the Y, 337-1500, if you'd like a lunch reserved. Otherwise, just come, bring your own lunch, or come and hear the lecture. Then Friday at noon, another lecture, part of our ecology series. Professor Ken Salo, S-A-L-O, will be talking about reinventing environmental justice, neoliberal nature, and the political ecology of social justice. Ken Salo is a wonderful lecturer, and I certainly encourage people to hear him this Friday at the Y, the corner of Wright and Chalmers, easily reachable by public transportation. The bus system comes by about 30 times an hour, so you can be concerned about the ecology and come by bus to hear Ken Salo Friday noon, October 13 at the Y. Our community university classes, some are going on from mid-September, but others are starting up in October 16. All the dance classes that Miss V teaches start on October 16. She's recovered very well from her knee replacement surgery. So Aurora Villacorta will be teaching beginning ballroom dance, mambo, tango, intermediate ballroom dance, starting October 16. Connected to our talk here today on Keeping the Faith, there's a basic mediation training starting November 10. If you'd be interested in that class, do give the Y a call. Basic mediation training, mutual problem solving, how to do it. The teacher is Elizabeth Simpson. That will be that course costs about $75. It goes from November 10. From 10 to 5 on Friday and Saturday from 1 to 4. So that'll be coming up November 10 and 11. Do call the Y if you have further questions. Well, let's get back to our guests who are patiently waiting on the phone. And I want to thank you for keeping a phone to your ear for this whole hour for the benefit of our listeners in this part of Illinois and people also listening on the web. People can go to WILL.UIUC.EDU to hear this program live or archived on your computer. Back to Maria and Richard McGuire. Yes, go right ahead.
We are very impressed with the scope of what you are on about and also how much it relates to what we are facing here and the topics that we feel very concerned about and are engaged in. And it's wonderful to realize the oneness of our world in terms of what's happening and what's needed and how we are learning to be deeper or fuller human beings in practical ways, but also maybe in deep philosophical ways.
Well, and also very pleasing to hear how the why stays at the edge of what's going on in society and the environment. Certainly made a great difference in my life to have participated, and I think a lot of my questions about communication and the impulse to do something about it came very much out of my experience with the Y, with the staff, and with other students there.
Well, and I want to publicly thank Ed Nestegen, who this month will be celebrating his 93rd birthday, for recommending the McGuires to be on the radio. I'm so pleased we could find a time to schedule them. They did have to get up especially early because it's early morning in Australia. So thank you for doing that.
No problem.
Well, you've said very nice things about the Y and this program, but so let me respond by being mean.
Yes.
What bothers me about this approach to conflict is what if the other person really does have a serious problem? What if they're a cocaine addict? What if they're a racist? What if they want to kill me?
Yes.
How does this method help?
Yes. Well, you can't get a guaranteed outcome. I mean, there's been often enough in history that people that were nonviolent and communicated very well got killed.
Sure.
or got ignored. One of the people that actually wrote one of the blurbs on Marshall's book is Gandhi's one of Gandhi's grandchildren or great grandchildren. Gandhi certainly suffered that fate.
It may well be a professor who's here at the University of Illinois now. If it's Raj Mahan Gandhi.
Oh, really?
Yes. Oh, Arun Gandhi.
This man was named Arun Gandhi.
Okay.
I don't know too much about him, but that's great to know as well. Yes. But you can't guarantee, you don't get a guaranteed outcome, and that could happen. There have been some dramatic stories that I've heard of people who have had some success dared to use this. I just read one on their website. Was an Indian fellow who was held up by somebody in London, and dared to say how he felt really anxious about this person threatening him, and what did the person need from him? And as it turned out, in the course of this, where his knees were shaking and the other person was still pretty demanding, it turned out the other person just wanted to get enough money to buy some chicken and actually gave back some of the money when the man said, I'm anxious about how I'm going to get home. So it can happen that way, but you cannot guarantee it. This has been used a lot, this approach and others similar to it, used a lot with people in jail. Has brought a lot of opening up of communication and people's having the chance to rethink what they were about. People who had been, thieves and caused violence, who got in touch with the feelings they had that had brought about that violence and realized their own pain and the pain of other people.
Richard, let me interrupt you, and I apologize for doing this, but we do have a caller waiting on our toll-free line, and I do want to let them enter the conversation. Line number four, you're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead.
Your caller is pleased that today's guests are present on Keeping the Faith. He participates today as he's most interested in peaceful communication. Your caller has enemies, but his enemies are not people. His enemies are the forces of darkness, which are also God's enemies. The 24 elders around the throne of God are petitioning our God to destroy those who destroy the earth, and this will shortly come to pass. God's people are peaceful, but our God will judge this earth, and it will not be pretty. Your comments, please. Thank you.
Well, it's very important to be open to, I think God's ultimate promise is love, and being open to that, to allow the threat to be an occasion to rethink what I'm doing and how I'm doing it, and what is it that I'm being called to do is very important. You know, that's one of the constant themes, and especially as I got to know in the Old Testament, was when you see an external enemy, to ask yourself, well, what am I doing that's causing injustice and harm in my community? What I've appreciated about learning these methods, so nonviolent communication or other things that I've learned, is that it helps me open myself to what's being called for in my life with God, and not to get focused on how I'm going to do payback or make threats to try to get my way.
One of the biblical writers said that the last enemy to be destroyed is death, reminding us in the biblical tradition that God is the creator of life and a lover of life, and that whenever there are things that lead to death, that we can know pretty sure that that's opposed to the will of God.
Yeah, I feel pretty strongly too that what God will actually do and how He will express Himself in the future or herself in the future, I don't quite know. But I do know, or I believe, I trust that finally God stands for love or for life and not for death and destruction. And I need to be humble to always ask again, God, what are you intending to have happen here when all these things that I struggle with in our world that make me wonder, where are we going, and are we really learning to share this planet as one planet of creation? When I struggle with that and ask God, what's this all for, then maybe I'm closer to love than when I see all the destruction is happening and God meant to get rid of certain forces or so. Then I feel I'm getting into judgment and into pretending I'm God and I know better than what's emerging in the moment. And all I know is finally love is stronger than death or hate or anything.
We do try to give many voices a chance on the radio. Let me repeat the phone numbers for listeners who have not called, who would like to. 333-9455 is the number that will reach several lines in Champaign-Urbana. That's 333-WILL. Elsewhere, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. And again, let me say that to reach the McGuires, even though they're clear across the world in Australia, you can go online to unfoldingfutures.net, unfoldingfutures.net, for Maria and Richard McGuire, our guest today. Let's talk a little bit more about the people who resist even joining in on communication. How do you respond to those kind of very difficult situations?
Well, yes, it's not always obvious. One thing that's important is to, if it's at all possible, talking in general terms, is to ask that person what they see going on, what they feel is needed. And get them expressing themselves, both in terms of what they see as the situation, whatever they say about it, and to receive what they're saying, yes, you're really angry about that, or you're really unhappy, or you feel very insecure, whatever it is that's coming out, to affirm what they decide to say. I have found that I'm able to turn a conversation. I haven't had somebody directly threatening me. I don't know how I'd act. I can't promise how I'd act in that kind of situation, but I have been in situations where people have been quite unpleasant and angry. And when I have remembered, because it is a matter of paying attention, to express how that person's feeling, to share that I'm feeling some anxieties about things as well, maybe not exactly the same things, but related, that builds a bridge. and that when a bit of the bridge gets started, then it's relatively it's much easier to understand, and also to, if I take responsibility for my feeling and not saying how, you know, someone is causing me to be a certain way, but to say that I'm just simply feeling what I'm feeling, that helps the other person say how they feel.
We have another.
If a person's threatening me, that I'm doing something that they feel unhappy about, and if I can allow them to tell me what it is they're unhappy about, that already makes a difference.
We have another caller waiting on line number one, local line. Please go ahead with our guest, the McGuires.
Hi, I was wondering if this sort of communication has ever been used with children, and how young you can start, and maybe with teenagers, and I'll get off the line and listen.
Oh, okay. Well, it's very helpful. There's lots of things. If you'd like to look on the website, there's letters and comments from various parents and teachers about how helpful they found this to be with children. There's even one woman in the States called Sura Hart that's done a work on education called Compassionate Classroom, and come and taught that here for teachers in Australia. Children, particularly, are very much moved by their feelings, and talking down to them or not acknowledging those feelings really blocks communication. We teach courses that use these methods and others, and we're always delighted when what we teach is primarily directed towards how you work with groups and how you do work in the community or work in your work. And we're delighted when people come back and say, well, I tried what you did with my teenagers, and why, we really understood each other for the first time. It worked so well. It made such a difference in their personal life. Another thing is sometimes it's not a matter of communication. Children often don't know and don't have the language to articulate how they're feeling. Sometimes it can be helpful to say yourself what feelings seem to show in them, to say it seems like you're feeling unhappy or angry or uncertain, or even uncertain is a feeling, that can allow feelings to come out and to have them, even younger children, is more a matter of your attitude towards them and your willingness to be receptive, that helps in a nonverbal way, and also to look in your own feeling. How are you feeling? What you're feeling moved by, and expressing that.
I wanted to add one more thing. The nonviolent communication uses also puppets and symbols. Like they use particularly two puppets for two animals that, in some contexts, may be culturally different in different contexts, but that the giraffe is an animal with a long neck, so they are a little bit further away and taking a stance that is maybe more perceptive or relational, and has a very big heart, supposedly, the giraffe. And the other animal is a jackal, and the jackal looks a bit scary, and he uses a lot of judgmental, almost like bullying and criticizing, punishing, controlling language. And the kids learn, even at preschool, like you were wondering, even at preschool age, they know how some of these messages get across to you as being really unhelpful, and that they are using it themselves with each other, that they learn through the animal to play that role stronger, either the judgmental one or the giraffe one with the heart. And then they act out the scene in the different ways of responding to something that happened. And they learn to put on that puppet. You can put it over your hand, and then learn a different way of saying it in one way and saying it in another way. Mm-hmm. And I personally, actually, if I may say so, I have experienced this as very enabling for myself, because we both have a very personal situation that pains us a lot. Our daughter has come into some problems in her mid-20s, and she wanted to be away from us, from any direct contact, just email contact, for a while. And it has been now already 2 years, and we think it will move through and come to another level. But she felt she needed to have distance for herself. And having a possibility of acting this out, with, in this case with Marshall Rosenberg himself, that I could play my daughter, and he was responding from a giraffe way of, with a big, big heart, acting as myself, as the mother, and I could express as my daughter all the pain she might have felt and all her thinking of why this was happening and what was needed and all that. It was so releasing. I felt so understood, so freed, even though I was the daughter in this case and he was the mother, but how he could express myself as the mother was just wonderful. And I learned so much about both my daughter and about myself, how I could act with her.
We're down to about our last 6 or 7 minutes with our guests by phone, the McGuires. Listeners may still sneak in a question or two or a comment, 333-9455 in Champaign. Elsewhere, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. How many children do you have, Maria?
We have two, a son and a daughter.
Is your son older or younger?
Yeah, 15 months older.
Older. Yeah. Where is he?
He's here in Sydney, and he started studying now as a mature-age student. He picked up a totally new studies, and he enjoys it a lot. He was in information technology before, and he will continue that, but he's also learning industrial design now and enjoying the connection there between the engineering aspects and the creativity aspect of constantly inventing new ways of doing it, and the consumer orientation, knowing how the user can be put into aspects, and the aesthetics, the beauty aspects, and also the environmental aspects of sustainability, what materials to use and how it can be recycled and made so that it can not destroy the earth, but really continue to be put into useful things.
Yeah. Well, let me ask both of you, since you've been married, I guess, approaching 4 decades soon.
Yeah.
You know these techniques for nonviolent communication, but what do you do when one of you looks at the other and says he or she isn't doing this? they know better. Why aren't they doing this?
that happens again and again. And well, it's one. And it's easy to get judgmental in that kind of situation. Well, you should be doing it. You know it. You went to the course. But the thing that actually makes the change is to, well, for one thing, to say how I feel. If I notice this is happening for Maria, saying how I feel, or that I notice, even yesterday when we were thinking about this interview, I noticed that she had an expression on her face. I thought she was being angry with me. So I said, I wonder if you're being what you're feeling right now, and it turned out she was feeling confused. So if I'd assumed she was angry or unhappy, by allowing a question like that to ask how she was feeling, I was shocked to see how non-understanding I was, and also it opened up our communication. So it comes up again and again. I might just also mention that one place where this has been very important in life, because you mentioned about criminal justice as being on the next show.
Yes.
There's an approach to working with people who have been convicted of some crime called circle sentencing here in Australia, and I think this is used in Canada and also restorative justice in the United States.
Yes.
Where you have people who have committed some kind of an offense, and the people who were hurt by it getting together. And a lot of the communication has to do with people beginning to realize how other people felt in that situation. The victims hearing how the person who was convicting felt and what led them to that. And also leading to, well, what's going to bring about a connection, or where do people want to go with this next? And as we understand, we've had some contact with that with the Aboriginal communities here, and it's really quite confronting to people. It's much more difficult. People find it's not the soft option. It's actually more challenging to the prisoner than the normal process, which they just sort of can step aside from, and brings about much more satisfying and long-lasting results for many people. by actually understanding the humanity of the people involved. I guess you mentioned that at the beginning. It's really allowing yourself to appreciate the humanity of the other that this is all about. This is a various techniques and methods and insights that are all about recognizing more deeply my own humanity and the humanity of the other. And, of course, from our faith perspective, it's also hearing God speaking in the situation.
Maria, in our last minute, let me ask you one question. Could you give me an example of how you could ask your husband for something that you really want, not as a demand, but as a request? Could you put that in the form of a question that so our listeners could hear how that really works?
It probably would be helpful to say first why you feel you need something and what you are after there. See, like I said before, when you state it as the one and only thing that needs to happen, then you put already the pressure on it. So you need to first say, because of all the pressure we have been under in the last few months with our constant running programs and being in demand of producing all this material and so on, I feel pretty exhausted, and I feel one thing that could really be helpful is that we might envisage in the next month to have a getaway for 2 days. How would it be if we looked at some options that are available and see how we could manage time-wise and how we could manage financially to do this? And how would it be, if you say it as, how would it be if we did that, then you open space for the other one to come back with possibilities rather than yes or no to a demand. So it's not a demand, it's an invitation.
I really appreciate that. That's a wonderful example, and we'll let Richard contemplate his response as we close our program. And let me thank our guests, Richard and Maria McGuire, who've talked with us by phone from Sydney, Australia. They got up very early in the morning to prepare for this, and I do thank them, and also thank our listeners who called in with questions and comments on our topic today on nonviolent communication. For more information, do go to unfoldingfutures.net to learn more about the McGuires and their program, Unfolding Futures. You can also go to CNVC, Center for Nonviolent Communication.org, for more information on nonviolent communication. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Since we've learned that we should ask for what we really want, the University Y needs about $1 million from someone for a major fix up of our wonderful building right here on campus, and for our capital campaign that we're going to be starting soon, we need to know if someone who has major resources would make a major gift. Do give me a call. 337-1500. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
You've helped make WILL a great radio station that brings you timely, thorough, and thought-provoking programs. Now please help WILL build its base of supporters to ensure the detailed analysis and objective reporting you want from WILL is there when you turn to us. If you've received a letter requesting an additional gift to build a member match fund, please mail your check today or give online at willpledge.org. Thank you.
Next time on the Afternoon Magazine, a look at the life and work of Charles Darwin in the years following his voyage on the Beagle. Science journalist David Quammen will join us following the 1 o'clock news in his new book, The Reluctant Mr. Darwin. Quammen calls Darwin's discovery of natural selection a deeply radical insight from a deeply cautious man. I'm Celeste Quinn. Please join me for the Afternoon Magazine, Monday through Friday, here on AM 580, WILL, Urbana.
It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.